This is like the real intro. Okay, so I'm Mike, and I'm here with Mike Polizzi.
Hello.
And I'm next to Steve Goldstein, making his debut on the show. So Steve brought up an idea, and he wants to talk about the 80s and 90s, how things were so different then, because we're like 40, and we grew up in the 80s and 90s. So Steve, what about the 80s and 90s were so different? Go ahead, go.
Gotta love unplanned podcast.
We didn't take any notes.
The best part about the 80s and the 90s, well, I think in a nutshell, is, for me, is not having everything so instantaneous, not having everything right now. You know, you look back and you see, you know, like going to the video store, you know, even before Blockbuster, even before like the corporate, you know, stores took over, but like the mom and pop video stores, it was always like an exciting thing, you know. You try to find the, you know, the new releases, and it was just good to browse through all different titles.
And if you couldn't find something, it made you want to watch it more because
you had to
wait.
And you can look at the stuff that your parents wouldn't let you rent. Like, you can actually go in and look at them.
Well, I mean, you can do that now with the internet. Can you imagine being like 15 years old now and looking at all the crap that's on the internet? I don't know what my mind would do.
Yeah, no, but like, you know, I feel like back then the covers for like horror movies were pretty
awesome.
Gory.
Awesome. And they had like a warm quality to them. They weren't digital. It was like someone painted something on it. So it just looked more raw and more alluring and more scary.
Yeah, for sure. But like that applied to everything. Like you wanted to get tickets to a concert, right? You'd have to like go to the video store, get a wristband, wait online for it. But once you got those tickets in your hand, it was like, boom, this is awesome.
It was a celebration.
You know, you had physical tickets in your hand.
It sometimes seems harder, even though the process is easier to get tickets, it sometimes seems harder to get tickets because with the digital age, you can snatch them up easier as opposed to a scalper physically getting them.
Yeah.
So it seemed like we tried to get Metallica tickets for when they played New York and New Jersey, and we couldn't get them because the pre-sales were all sold out by the time it came, by the time the sales got to people like us.
But like, with the digital sale of tickets, like going online, it's like, you're not seeing anything. You're just getting a message from the website saying, oh, you know, these seats are all taken now. Whereas like, I don't know, waiting online for tickets, it's like.
Well, before, like, and in the time before, we were of the age of getting tickets. Before that, I think you had to like camp outside the arena.
Oh like, yeah,
I remember.
Like in the 70s.
Yeah, I remember in the 80s when I was a kid, I went to see the Harlem Globetrotters at the Nassau Coliseum, and there were people in sleeping bags outside, sleeping outside the Coliseum.
That's when they sold them right at the box office, right?
And I said, "Well, what are these people doing?" And they said, "They're waiting online for the Prince concert." Because Prince, this must have been during Purple Rain.
Yeah.
So he was playing the Coliseum, and people had heaters and sleeping bags, and
that's
were
crazy.
Waiting to get Prince tickets. I don't miss that. I don't know if I would want to do that. So I like the ease in getting tickets, but sometimes it's hard, especially to get the in-demand bands, because, like I said, they're snatched up so much.
Yeah. But even like movies, like if you want to go see a movie, you could probably find it already on you know some site, or you got Netflix and all this stuff where it's just. Everything's instant. You want music instead of going to Sam and looking at the records or like waiting for your favorite band to come out.
Yeah,
you know?
Everything's so simple. It's handed to you, and it's.
And I feel like it's not
back
appreciated.
Then when you wait for it. Exactly, appreciate.
Yeah. It was definitely more of a journey to get it, and I mean that has disadvantages as well. But I think the weight increases the demand. It increases the enthusiasm,
the value.
Like I would buy albums sometimes and not know what the music was. I would do it based on the cover.
On the art,
You know, like that's how I got like Manowar and Yngwie Malmsteen. The Yngwie Malmsteen album trilogy had that dragon with the three heads on it.
Yeah,
so I was like, what the fuck does this sound like? Because you didn't have the internet to see what it sounds like, the sample. And then like stores like Tower Records would have the headphones, and they would have select albums that you can listen to on the headphones.
Oh,
that was like the beginning
of the sampling. I actually worked at Tower Records. That was my first like job, and they had the headsets and everything.
And singles, buying like cassette singles.
We had a singles room in Tower Records.
Yeah.
It was just singles.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like as an adult I would much rather be living now than in the 80s, because because you think of what we had to go through to get it, and it just seems so annoying. And now things are less annoying.
But it was worth it. It had more value when you finally got those things.
Right, right.
Whereas now, kids, and even I'm guilty of it.
These damn kids.
I'm guilty of it too. It's all right. So
everything's easy.
Yeah, Tool comes out with an album or whatever, right? I can just go on Spotify and listen to the album, and that's that. There's no artwork. There's no reading lyrics. There's no like. It's just not there anymore.
Yeah,
sniffing the liner notes.
Oh yeah.
It takes away from the tactile nature of
that
it.
That new smell.
That new CD smell.
Yeah, those long boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Working at the Wiz, I actually got to witness the transition from cassettes being extinct and CDs taking over, and VHS being replaced with DVD. I got to like see all that at the Wiz.
That was awesome. And I feel like the rate of, I don't know, the rate that those things came out, let me think about this, the impact, the things that came out that impacted us like a lot were in the 80s and 90s,
sure.
Now I feel like there's not as many new things that are really impacting. Like inventions and stuff, but...
Other than smartphones, maybe.
Well, the smartphone. The smartphone actually started all this bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the music, I don't think, has much of a cultural impact as it did in the 90s.
No.
I think the 90s were the last great cultural impact of music. Now it's more of video games. Comedians are the new rock stars now. Comedians play arenas and stadiums, and the only bands that do it are the older ones. There's not a lot of newer bands that play stadiums anymore. And plus, it's also the fact that we had to pay for music back then.
Yeah.
So if we paid for it, that was an investment, and we almost had to listen to it, because it's like, okay, I paid $12 for this. I'm going to listen to it whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
And the more you listen to it, the more that you liked it, and then you became a fan.
You mean like a whole album?
Yeah.
As opposed to today, where we can just buy any song we want.
It's definitely more disposable, and it becomes even more disposable when you don't have to pay for it.
Yeah. But here's a good one. Is when there was no internet, and we weren't exposed to that much music because we didn't know it was out there.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? So we had to like go and look and really look hard for those things, and like indie record stores, independent record stores and stuff like that, where they get imports. I remember buying a ton of imports.
Yep.
And now the kicker is it better that we're exposed to pretty much all music from all over the world so quickly, or is it just so saturated that it's just hard to find those really niche bands, you know, that like that make a mark?
It was back then, it was the journey and the destination. The journey being finding the music, researching the music, asking the record store clerk what these guys sounded like.
Yeah, and then spend hours to see them.
Yeah, and then the destination would be listening to it.
And being like
over
the
and
first
over.
Person out of your friends to be like, yo, I found this cool band, you know, check this out.
Or listening to it once and going, yeah, it's all right, but yeah, it'll grow on me, and then listening to it again and again and again, and finally it sticks to you.
Yeah.
I remember when Metallica's Black album came out, Steve and I bought it with our friend Chris, and we went back to Steve's house. We must have been 15 years old and played the album from beginning to end. And the only song we knew was Enter Sandman, because that was the video and that was the single. The rest of the songs we never heard before.
Right.
So now, like when Hardwired was released, and Hardwired is a great album, but we were able to hear every single song
right away.
Many times right away for free before the album actually came out.
Yeah.
So it creates less demand, and I think less demand creates less enthusiasm. You know, but at the same time, we have access to every single thing Metallica's ever done just by our fingertips. So imagine being a new Metallica fan and wanting to know everything about them. You can access that. So, you know, there's cons, and then there's pros as well.
There is. But I, for some reason, I just remember, I'm trying to think back. I got more out of music because of the journey. When you're saying journey and destination, I enjoyed the journey part.
Yeah.
Like finding out, like, oh, I know Metallica has this B-side for And Justice for All, you know, the Prince.
The Prince,
whatever,
yeah.
And I just couldn't find it. And then you had they eventually sold it as a B-side, as a single, for like, you know, whatever the, I don't know, I don't know if it was on the one single. Maybe,
I don't remember.
The Thrill of the Hunt.
Yeah, exactly. Or you would have to order it at the store.
Oh yeah, that was exciting too.
Yeah, like, it's like, oh, finally got it in.
Like, I'm a big soundtrack fan, so I was always looking for scores that were hard to find, that you couldn't find in the local record store. Yeah. So I actually found, thanks to one of my relatives in the Village, Manhattan, a record store called Footlight Records, and they had a lot of rare things, and I found these soundtracks that I never thought I could ever find, like The Predator, Evil Dead 2, like I found these actual soundtracks.
Yeah.
And they had other things too, they had rock and everything, but...
I got the Footloose, but that Footloose thrill, soundtrack.
You really did?
I bought it when I was like third, fourth grade or something, whatever came out.
Yeah. That and we rode bikes.
Yes.
These kids these days don't ride. Well,
I still ride bikes.
I think, well, you do, but that's, you're like an adult. But it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm just not around enough kids, but I think when they do ride bikes, they're not gone for the whole day. Like, we were gone for the whole day. It's like, yeah, just ride around the block and I want you to get by your car.
Yeah,
that's
it. I'd get lost.
Times. Yeah.
Why is it? Why was
like,
it like
would you let your, like, Steve has a, was she five?
She'll be six in August.
She has an almost 6-year old. Would you let her she's eight?
Not in this day and age.
Remember when we were like 8 or 9?
But Steve, why is that?
Well, I think
what has changed?
I think parents are more scared. I don't think anything's. I don't think it's become more dangerous.
We're scared because of the internet, because we see things.
Yeah, because you see things, but
the media's enhanced.
Fake news.
Yeah, but like if you look at the like crime statistics in your neighborhood, it's probably less than it was when we were kids. But you're so freaked out by what you hear in the news. It's like,
crazy,
do not go 2 feet away from the house. But when we were kids, it's like, yeah, go to the next concert plaza and just come back whenever.
Yeah, I would like ride my bike like in the neighborhood, and we would like find these, you know, these those ditches that they used to have. Like, there's like, we would just like go in
and
there.
And our parents couldn't fucking find us because we didn't have any cell phones. They wouldn't know what to do if they couldn't find us.
Yeah, it's like be home in time for dinner.
Now it's like people are gonna implant their kids with chips. Microchips.
I used to ride my bike when I was like 9 or 10 down. I mean, this isn't going to make sense to most people, just to us really, but you know, like Old Nichols Road?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a busy road, man.
Oh, every town had an Old Nichols Road,
I used to ride down Old Nichols Road from like where I lived in, it was, I don't want to say where I lived.
Long Island.
I was riding my bike on busy-ass roads, and my parents were like,
no helmets.
Yeah, no helmets.
I actually agree with having kids wear helmets. If it protects them from getting traumatic brain injury, and apparently if you look at the stats, it has, I'm fine with that. I don't buy that idea about, oh, these kids these days are a bunch of pussies. It's like, no, they're smarter, and parents are smarter because they're helping the kids not injure their brains. And who wants kids with injured brains? The internet's doing that already. So... what else? Anything else? Movies. What did we talk? Movies.
Music videos. I'm sorry. Music. Well, music videos. That's
music
one
videos,
thing.
That
MTV. Before it became saturated with reality crap.
Oh
which is not reality at all.
Oh, yeah. Man, I grew up on MTV.
Yeah. So did I.
80s MTV was fantastic.
Yeah.
90s kind of changed.
I didn't mind.
90s were still good.
It's still good, but they had more like the reality stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, the real world came out.
They started taking over.
They had like
more programs.
They had like good like variety type shows. Like, remember Jon Stewart had a show.
Howard Stern was the first guest. Remote Control.
Flux, was that on MTV?
Yeah. That was Liquid Television.
That was a great
Beavis and Butthead.
They had great programming for a while. You know, like really, really cutting edge like shows and series.
Yeah. Yeah. Singled Out.
Chris Hardwick
got his start. Yeah.
And Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah. So silly.
Miami would watch that.
Even like the spring breaks, remember they had Primus would play, or like Spinal Tap.
This is all reminding me, but changing the channel a little bit, Nickelodeon, you had Double Dare.
Oh my god.
That was fun to watch. You had,
apparently Mark Summers, the host. You can't do that until Alanis Morissette was on that. Apparently Mark Summers, the host of Double Dare, had like really bad OCD. Like he would be the kind of guy who was trapped inside of his house or apartment because he was cleaning things all the time.
Really?
Yeah. That was a crazy show. I used to watch that all the time. But yeah, and it was like the value of the music video. The music video back then was a production, and it was just a way to sell the song. And now,
I love
you know,
music
music videos are still around today, but again, it's not
different.
It's not the same cultural impact.
Back then, the budgets were low, the video quality's low to compared to today's standard, but it was wacky and original.
Yeah.
It was just fun to
and
watch.
It was so cheesy.
Well, that was big for a while. I mean, directors, like, you were having, so some of your directors of these, like, music videos became, like, really acclaimed, like, movie directors.
Well, Fincher,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Spike Jonze.
Fincher. Fincher did... Yeah, Spike Jonze.
Yeah,
Fincher. Didn't he do like Nine Inch Nails videos or something?
Yeah, that's the only one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
so
thinking
that's
like in my head, I'm thinking.
I think so.
That's why Reznor does the.
He does
soundtrack.
The scores. Yeah.
I don't know if he directed Nine Inch Nails videos, but
it's possible.
I think Reznor did like the credit sequence in Seven.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe that's. I don't know. I'm not sure.
We'll have to look this stuff up.
Yes. Or whoever's listening will have to look it up. I don't feel like looking it up. Now we're outside at a dock drinking beer. It's a beautiful summer day on Long Island. And I hate Long Island. I hate Long Island, but this is nice. We're by the water. By the water with a nice breeze. But what else? Any other issues or...
Issues
or... Well, just about the 80s and the 90s compared to today.
Oh, yeah,
Steve has a big list. Jesus.
I have a list in my head.
This was Steve's idea.
I'm like one of those... I'm like my parents. Every generation will
scorn the next man and their music.
So how about like directions? Like, I used to either had to like remember how to get somewhere,
yes.
Or like you had to read a map,
yes.
Or you know you had to stop and ask directions, or
yes.
Whatever. Now, to be honest, I don't remember how to get anywhere because I just rely on this on the GPS. That's it. You know, I don't have to think about it.
Yep. Remember remembering phone numbers? How many phone numbers do you actually remember?
Back then I remembered a ton.
Yeah, I know, but I'm talking about now.
I think I just remember my
I remember my own.
Yeah, I remember my own. Yeah.
I think one of my friends, I forgot who it was, but didn't remember his or her own phone number.
Isn't it weird though that we remember our phone number from?
Yeah, because we had to.
Oh, I remember my old.
But still,
number.
Like, isn't it? I never thought of my old phone number until you just said it. And
yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah, I don't remember
I
your
don't
old.
Think, I don't think about. My
yeah,
number.
Well, it's just been
it's
drilled.
Imprinted.
Yeah, it's drilled
crazy.
Into our head. So yeah, phone numbers aren't remembered, and directions are. I think if you go somewhere enough, you won't need the GPS anymore. You'll
yeah, but it takes
eventually.
Me. It takes some time.
Yeah.
Because people just rely on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you just press a button.
It's become such a crutch that we will forget how to walk.
Yeah.
We'll
need a crutch.
We'll need a crutch for the crutch. Pretty soon, the crutch will need a crutch. God damn it.
And it's all tied in now to Facebook. Everything.
Social
like,
media.
Your calendar is updated through Facebook.
Yeah.
Like if you make plans with someone.
That's a whole other topic. Because I can go off on that.
To sign up for this podcast, I use Podbean, which is really good. Good price, unlimited shit that you can do.
Pay for this?
Yeah. It's like $108 a year.
Oh wow.
So it's on like unlimited stuff.
And they store it like you post
yeah.
it on their thing.
Yeah. You post on their thing and then you do like real RSS feed to iTunes and then it uploads it. So, but, in order to sign up for that, I could go through Facebook. I could either create an account with my email or go through Facebook. So, yeah, it's all one big hive mind.
Do you think there will be a point, in the future where there's no more websites? It's just Facebook.
Yeah, it's after the solar storm where we lose all the technology and electricity and
Facebook will be left.
And everyone goes barbarian.
Yeah. Yeah. So... But, anything else, Steve? Got any other on your list?
I have so many.
Go for it. Playing Dungeons and Dragons instead of video games?
Oh, Nintendo, Atari, I miss those days.
Video games,
like, now video games
but you don't think video games are better? Video games,
video games are so much better, but for me it's like more of a nostalgia. It's like, it's just, yeah.
Like,
now video games are like movies.
I know, but the graphics are better, the controls seem to be.
The controls, there's too many.
Yeah, there's too many buttons.
Yeah, you know. But I gotta say, is my daughter, you know, I bought one of those little classic Nintendo. They're like this big
store.
They have like 30 games on them. My daughter played on them with me. We were playing like Super Mario Bros. And she loved it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't that great at it, but she still, it was fun for her, you know?
And I think, it's like, we didn't have, obviously we didn't have smartphones. had video games coming up. We had stupid phones, but the kids these days seem to be more addicted to their phones and their and their tablet. And I don't blame them. I mean, it's highly addictive even for adults. But
yeah,
I think
it's meant to be addictive.
Yeah, kids' minds are so malleable that they seem to be drawn to it more. And I thought I read an article about how they get the same level of dopamine in their brains than they do compared to doing drugs. So when you take like a tablet away from the kids or a phone away from the kids, it's like they're going through withdrawal because they want
true.
That dopamine kick.
I've had to go. I've had to have back and forth with my daughter for that.
And when you say to her, you said, "Well, where did you learn this? Who taught you this?" And then she say, "You, all right? I learned it by watching you."
Yeah. I gotta say though, there are some good things about it.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Her imagination, she always uses her imagination. It helps her reading, you know.
Yeah, it's another vehicle to allow the imagination to flourish.
Sure.
So, yeah. What about you, Mike? Any other waxing nostalgias?
No, I like going back to the 90s with the music. Like, I found a really good Pandora station that probably plays everything. Every song they played is
all right. Well, let's talk about the music that we grew up listening to compared to the newer bands today.
I'm all right with some new bands.
I know, I am too. I think there are some great new bands, but, and I've said this before, I don't think they have the same cultural impact the way Nirvana did, or Pearl Jam did, or Soundgarden, or Nirvana.
Right there,
name a new band, a rock band. Like, the hip-hop bands and the pop bands are still very, very popular, and, can still have a little bit of that impact, but as far as rock, as far as saying,
More Black scenes. Kings, like, you know what I mean? Like, scene, back in the day, it was more about the scene.
Right.
Now it's like,
oh yeah, you're right.
You know, you don't get the scene part of it. You get just the one-offs, Muse. They're a great band.
I love Muse. But they've been around
for a while, but not in the 90s. But.
No, well, you know, they started in 97,
I think. Did they really?
Yeah, it was their first one, yeah. They've been around for 20 years, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
But, there's no scene. That was a bad example. I didn't know they were around that long. I don't know. But if you want to go deeper into that, it's also, look at, recording music in general. The recording studios in the 80s, 90s, early 90s, before, you had Pro Tools and stuff, it was tape. It was all analog, and it sounded, there's a sound to the analog.
A warmth.
A warm sound. Yeah. Now, when I listen to music, new music, it all sounds so flat to me.
Yeah.
Because it's
recorded too loud.
It's recorded right into the computer, just digital.
Yeah.
There's no...
Oh, there's no... raw, organic sound.
No, and it's so perfect, that there's all these tools they can use. They cut up the tape, or not tape, but they can cut up the audio files, they can auto-tune, they can quantize, they can do all this stuff to make it sound perfect. And that's what I don't like about it, is I like my music, not perfect.
With mistakes.
Yeah, but even the sound, the live sound, you have feedback, a little bit out of tune,
Yeah, or a flub here and there.
There's something real about that.
Yeah, Metallica's my favorite band, but my criticism of Death Magnetic was that it sounded too clipped and too compressed, where it was almost, the drums were almost distorted in a way.
That's why everything up to the Black Album sounded so cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Bob Rock Black Album sounded incredible, just the way
and that was analog.
Yeah, it was analog. Yep. But yeah, name a band, a rock band, within the past 5 years that made the same impact that Nirvana did in their first 3 years.
I can't.
Maybe we can't, but maybe someone like Leanne, someone like a 20-something-year-old might.
I don't know.
Is a scene, and I think it's more of the hipster scene.
Not
the hipster, but the millennial scene.
Right, but does that scene have the same impact that Nirvana did? I'm talking, not to them, though. I'm talking to the whole society. Is society paying attention to them, or is it just the kids paying attention
because
to themselves?
It goes back to the point that was made. It's saturated now. You can go all over the map.
Yeah.
But also, there's no message. There's no message. It's you want to hear like Skrillex. I would say he's part of this cultural revolution of maybe millennials.
Dubstep.
Or the whole dubstep thing. But there's no message behind it. There's no
Well, it's
just party and do a lot of drugs.
Right, I mean, but like, you figure rock music at least should be, or at least the way it was, is would respond to what's going on politically, what's going on culturally. And if there's ever a time for a rock band to come out and sing some protest songs, it's now.
Yeah.
And I, again, like, maybe Rise Against does it, but they've been around for a while and they don't have mainstream attention, and maybe Anti-Flag or, you know, a couple of the punk bands, but, you know, not like an impact of like a Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young doing Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, or
what do you think it is?
Rallying.
Is it that they don't, they just don't care?
No, or? I think Bob Lefsetz, who's a great music writer, wrote a column about this saying it's because of the corporatization of everything. So why would, you know, if the music industry is run by three gigantic corporations, why would they pay a band to badmouth things that the corporation supports? You know, and if they're not a money, and back in the 70s, bands would lose money, but the record labels would be like, all right, the first album's not going to make enough money, but we're nurturing the artists, and they're going to record something bigger on their second or third album. You don't get that because, you know, if a company's losing money, why bother keeping the investment?
But I feel like today there's more independent labels and more indie bands out there.
Right.
So, like,
but
with, if those indie labels are probably not, they don't have that corporate mentality.
Sure.
So I don't know if these bands aren't.
Yeah, maybe they are. Maybe they're releasing a lot of great protest songs, but it's not entering the mainstream zeitgeist.
Yeah.
You know, people
that's
aren't.
Thing. What is mainstream now?
Yeah.
Or there is what, no mainstream.
Mainstream's whatever.
Or like, what can be on the cover of newspapers, or there's top stories in news that older people would watch and older people would know about. So I'll give you an example. When in like 1996, 97, after Columbine happened, Marilyn Manson was on every news channel because they linked Columbine to him.
Right.
So people who were 60 years old knew who Marilyn Manson was just based on that news story.
Right.
So he gained infamy, and from that infamy he became more popular. It messed him up psychologically because he didn't have anything to do with it, but people blamed him for it.
Yeah, I guess we hear more about like Kanye West.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
About his stupid.
About his, but that's his own personal mental problem. It's not him.
That's what I'm saying is.
But he's household.
In this period that we're in, that's the stuff that we hear about. The stupid
drama.
I mean, every once in a while, like, Beyonce will have, like, a dance act in, a Super Bowl halftime show that...
Or Lady
that,
Gaga.
That protests something, that protests, you know, how black people are treated by the cops or some social justice issue. But they're not rock acts. I'm talking specifically rock.
Gotcha.
And there's really not. Like, Metallica's latest album, there was nothing really political. It was just a lot of general statements.
It's just... back to Polizzi's point is... Everything's so saturated, man.
Yeah.
Like, especially with the media, internet media now, it's just all about clicks, you know? So people are posting stories about, like, complete and utter nonsense that are getting tons of clicks. And that,
right.
What does that say about
But that's
about
not important.
Us?
And the attention span's getting shorter.
Yeah.
And there were no 24-hour news shows when we were kids.
Right.
Like, people had to wait until, like, the news with Dan Rather to find out what's going on, or read Newsday or the New York Times.
Which, back to the original point, is that the important stuff gets lost.
Yeah.
You know,
the stuff that really matters.
That really matters gets lost in all that. So it doesn't, whether it's a rock band or it's something prolific, you know, that has happened, or something terrible that has happened, like any type of news, music, art, movies, it's so saturated,
or
it's all covered up.
Or what happens is that, say, one terrible thing happens, that's all the media focuses on.
Meanwhile,
there's a lot of terrible things going on and a lot of important things going on, and that falls by the wayside because they're focused on this one terrible thing.
And it's all driven by by us.
Yeah, because they want the clicks.
If we click on that, that's what they're going to focus on, because that's what pays the most.
But, like, news used to not make...
So sick of Facebook.
News for television stations used to not make money.
No,
TV stations would say, we understand this is going to be at a loss, but we have to inform the public. And then when the Fairness Doctrine was eliminated, it kind of let that fall by the wayside, and then it's like, okay, well, wait a minute, we can make money off news now, and the only way to make money off news is to have these clickbaity things, yep, instead of, again, what really matters to us. These damn kids in their news.
All that clickbait, like, you'll never guess what happens. Oh, click here, you'll never guess what happens next.
And then you gotta click
here, and then it takes you to a store. And
yeah. Then it's like, well, where did my 2 hours go? I had important things to do.
That's the thing. Today, you get sucked in your smartphone, you just get sucked in social media, and you're missing life. You gotta look up.
I mean, but we're all guilty.
We totally are.
And it's so isolating.
I'm working on it, too.
Yeah.
I personally, I'm still on Facebook with the events and the Messenger. Right. I'm fortunate to find separate apps for that. Right. I'm avoiding the news feed. I don't want to be on that thing anymore. It's like, I might go on there to share some projects because that's just an outlet.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go on there because I'm wasting, like, I've woken up in the morning, a day where I had to get ready and go to work, and just stood there like a brainwashed zombie, scrolling and clicking. And all of a sudden, it's like 10 to 9, I have to get to work.
It's a time suck. You lose that time.
You lose time, you're going to lose life.
And if you think about it, then this turns into a whole Black Mirror episode. So who cares if you liked someone's picture and someone liked their picture? Why are we so driven to
that? We get validation.
It's a dopamine high.
Yeah, it's a dopamine. Yeah. It's like,
and it's an addiction.
It's like,
it's a slot machine.
Yeah. It's like, the girl I liked in college liked my post about Trump.
She must like me.
Meanwhile, she's married and has 3 kids.
Yeah, and I don't get the people that need to like post every little thing they do. I'm having this orange juice. Look at this. I'm scratching my ass. Look at this.
I had to modify my timeline because people would check me in, and sometimes I don't want people to know where I am. And so anytime someone checks me in, I'll accept it on my timeline later on when I'm home.
Yeah, I have mine set up the same way.
We're sitting down. Yes.
Locations.
Yes. Oh, we're gonna be here for another hour now.
I have no complaints.
Oh yeah.
Oh, wake me up if I fall.
Oh, this is great at the bridge.
Oh wait, I'm looking at nothing.
We're looking at the Great South Bay here.
Yes. All right, Steve, what's on your list if you're awake?
You have to talk closer
to the microphone.
So we just talked about what?
We're talking about social media.
We somehow got into social media.
The past. I guess we're just comparing.
There was no social media back then.
We're comparing our youth to today's, I suppose.
You know what the social media was? It was going out of your house and making your own
social
network.
It was gossip.
Yeah, it was gossip.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was. Like, I remember when Return of the Jedi, before Return of the Jedi came out, in my neighborhood, everybody was saying that Luke is going to die.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, no. It's like, no, I heard Luke is going to die. So then when I saw the movie, and spoiler alert, but when Luke was being zapped by the lightning, I'm like, oh my God, the kids in the neighborhood, right? And I was screaming at the screen going, no. And then when Darth Vader, rescued him, I was like, yeah!
Dude, if you have to give someone a spoiler they deserve it to be spoiled.
Well, I do a podcast with my friend Erin, and she knows the endings of Star Wars, but she never really doesn't remember seeing the movie, so we're watching it again. But yeah, I mean, there's a few, but that was the gossip, and you didn't know what everyone was doing all the time.
Here's another one.
We're outside playing.
Here's another one on my list. The mail. Remember how you used to wait for the mail?
Oh, yeah.
And it was gratifying to get a letter from,
a pen pal.
Yeah, I used to, write, when I came home from college my first year that summer, I wrote postcards to, all my friends. That was the only way to keep in touch. Email had just started at that point, but it wasn't, only in, the lab at college.
Yeah.
It wasn't, on people's personal computers.
And the phone bill wasn't unlimited calls yet, was it? Like, using the landlines? Like, if you were to call someone from Fredonia to Long Island...
A long-distance call.
It would be a long-distance call, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, just, waiting for the mail.
That sucked, though.
Yeah, back to the anticipation.
You miss people less nowadays because you know what everybody's doing. So I kind of like that. I kind of like not missing people. I don't want to miss anyone.
When you see them, you have stuff to talk about.
I was just going back to what I was saying about, doing a Facebook, removing myself from the news feed and sharing so much because your friends that care about you, they're always knowing what you're doing, so they're not going to reach out to you.
Exactly.
But if you keep the mystery, then you get together, you go by the harbor, you have a couple of beers, and then you show each other pictures of your vacation.
You just hit the nail on the head, man. It's like an isolating... When you know all the time what your friends are doing from posting pictures and checking in.
Yeah, then you're
stuff,
not interested in reaching out.
Yeah, no one wants to reach out to you, and it becomes this isolating feeling of like, hey, you know, how come no one's calling or texting? Because they know whatever.
They know what you're doing.
Now, you can use that, though, to get back in touch with someone. It's like, hey, man, I saw you at the Great South Bay. I'm there all the time. Let's get together.
So
you can use that.
There's ups and downs, of course.
Yeah.
I'd say there's more downs.
I was just going to say that.
You're a downer, man.
I am about. Dude, I'm a crotchety old man.
I know.
Get off my lawn.
You guys are a text or a call away. We get together. We do stuff.
Yeah.
I don't need to constantly share every time I'm taking a shit on Facebook.
Yeah.
Unless it's a good one. Then you got...
Just to go back there, there's Messenger. Facebook Messenger's good, because if there is friends at a long distance, relatives long distance, you have that. There's your pen pal. But the news feed is just, you're seeing everyone's political opinions.
Oh, that.
And you're reconsidering them.
Yeah, these friends. It's like, wait a minute, this person was a great person,
there's a huge ugly side to social media.
Even with Facebook Messenger, I find that, you know, like, there's a couple people that I talk to on Facebook Messenger on a daily basis. You know, every day, it's like, check this out, or check this out. And that's cool. But, like, there's some people, I feel like, when you reach out to them on Facebook Messenger, it's like, even though, like, they can look at it and respond to it on their own personal time whenever they want to. But, like, I feel like it's almost... you're like annoying them or something, you know what I mean? Like,
well, it depends. I mean, like, if you're trying to have a conversation or communicate during work hours, it's you can't really chime in and follow.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I get things. Mike would send links about cool Star Wars stuff or whatever, but I don't always get a chance to look at that right away.
Yeah.
So it's, but I mean, that we know how to get in touch.
I think
that's the point. Like, the people that matter are going to be there. You need this electronic barrier.
I also feel like personal relationships aren't as, they turn out to be not as meaningful. And I'm talking about, like, not like really good friends that you've known for, like, you know, your whole life, but, like, when you become friends with people, it's not like, you don't have to go out with them to kind of talk to them
right
now. You don't get
I'll see them on Facebook.
Yeah, you don't get that personal, like, you don't get fulfillment.
The personal touch is gone.
Yeah, because they're not in the same room.
Yeah,
same space.
That. I don't like
but
it.
But then there's a flip side. Then you got people that are addicted to looking at their phone. I was guilty of this. You're just like, you're with the company
in
person,
but you're constantly looking down,
and you're yesing them, and you're not really paying attention.
Yeah.
They could be telling you the world's ending, and you'd be like, uh-huh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and you're missing out. When you go to a concert or you go to a show, you're missing out on the content that's being thrown at you because you're too busy, like,
looking down,
taking the pictures and posting it and checking in.
Like, YouTube has taken...
Yeah, exactly. And then making sure, seeing who likes this.
Yeah, and it's like, dude, just enjoy the show.
Well, what happened?
YouTube has taken the mystery out of going to concerts. I remember when we were kids, we would see, if we were lucky, like, a live clip of... I always go back Metallica, but a live clip of Metallica on MTV. Yeah. Or, like, if we were lucky, if we got the Cliff 'Em All video. But for their, like, say their Black Album tour, like I said, there were clips on MTV, but the only real version we would get of it was if we actually went to the concert. We would see pictures in rock magazines and metal magazines.
Yeah.
But and then maybe at the flea market we would find a bootleg on VHS. Maybe.
Yeah.
But when you saw the concert for the first time, everything was brand new because you didn't have access to what the concert was. So if you look at old Metallica concerts from, like, say, the Justice Tour or even the Black Album Tour, I think the reaction from the crowd is even more than the crowds today, because this is them not knowing what the hell is going to happen.
Yeah. Yep.
Because they've never seen this footage of this tour anywhere before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the mystery level is totally increased.
Or you could not hit play.
Huh?
I guess, or you could not hit play on the YouTube, but you're right.
Yeah.
That even
it's too tempting. It's too tempting.
Even, I mean, I love YouTube, but because you can find anything on YouTube.
Yeah.
I do a lot of, you know, self-study with YouTube, like educational things, but you're right. I mean, they're spoiling everything.
Yeah, like,
everything is so easy.
Like, the Metallica concerts, we missed in New York, New Jersey, because the show sold out too fast. I can watch the whole show, and I watched a lot of the show, going, damn, I wish I was there, but it's like, at least I knew what it was like.
Yeah. But also, here's a pro of, we're talking about cons, here's a pro of, like, YouTube and those type of sites is, the content can be very alternative, you know, whereas on regular TV, you wouldn't be able to see those things.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah.
And there's cool shows that are, you know, like that one, you know, that Hot Ones First Week show
where
I feel like that show is, like, targeted for people on YouTube, you know what I mean? Like, that, you know, it's for, like, the generation of, this generation of, like...
Yeah.
You know, cool little shows that you can stream.
Yeah.
Well, like web series.
Yeah, like little web series.
Yeah, I mean, we're all about that, too.
Well, my nephew, who's 9, his favorite... One of his favorite characters is a YouTuber. Like, Dan... Dan TDM, who's a Minecraft player.
Oh, yeah, he's
but
the
this,
English guy, right?
Yeah, this that guy plays... He sold out the Beacon Theater in Manhattan, which is like over 1,000 people. He goes on tour because he has millions and millions and millions of followers.
Well, that's the thing, is it also created new different type, like new celebrities.
Yeah.
Like different, these new like types of celebrities.
Yeah, there's personalities.
They didn't have the gatekeepers of the networks to do it. They just put their own stuff out there, which I think is a positive.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Which is awesome for like indie filmmakers and actors like us.
Yeah, like growing up, I mean, talking about just blending now, our conversation now to going back to like the 90s, I remember graduating high school with dreams and intentions of like working for George Lucas or something, and I actually wrote letters with the mail saying, hey, here's my resume, here's what I want to do, blah blah blah, and they would send me really nice rejection letters.
Yeah.
but I would, I guess what I was trying to get at is like, it was so much harder to be a filmmaker and do things like that, and today anyone that has a phone could do it. Like, everything is, it's like, it's great, but then it goes back to saturation, too.
Yeah,
have people that have, and this is, I saw this guy on, do you remember Dave Grohl put out that movie, Sound City?
Of course.
His engineer said the worst part about, like, Pro Tools and people being able to record, like, music in their bedrooms is that the people that have no business, like... doing that
are
doing
it.
And getting notoriety out of it, where you have people that are skilled and crafted, and this is their craft,
and they're not making any money.
They're not making any money because of this. You know?
Nobody wants to pay anyone either.
And that's why you don't hear as many quality sounding records.
Yeah, because why bother paying a lot of money for someone who knows what they're doing when you can kind of do an okay version yourself?
Exactly. Right. And spend basically no money on it.
Yeah.
Everything I went to school for and aspired to be is now something
accessible.
Everybody is doing for nothing. It's now resort. It's now a hobby.
Yeah. It took away jobs.
It's an expensive hobby.
Yeah.
You're taking your drugs.
You're taking your drugs. God damn it. We're not bitter. We're not bitter. We're not bitter or unfulfilled at all.
I'm a bitter old crotchety get off my lawn man.
Yes, but you look great.
Like, we sound like grumpy old men.
No, man, listen, no,
I'm kidding.
Yeah, no,
I'm kidding.
But at the same time, I embrace the modern times and try to have a balance. It's about balance. You want to embrace the modern times, but you also want to go back to the ideas and values of what it was like.
You gotta remember your roots, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't forget your roots.
You remember, like, when your kid and when Steve's kid and my nephew were, you know, our age, they'll be talking about, you know, back when we were kids, we had to carry around a tablet. Kids these days have microchips in their heads. You know how easier it is now? Much easier it is now?
Yeah, it's constantly evolving.
Yeah. Yep. I'm sure the, you know, the horse and buggy drivers were saying how easy the people who drive cars have it, you know?
And now Tesla with these self-driving cars.
Yeah.
It's going to be crazy.
It's constant evolution.
The future is now.
Always evolving.
Yes.
Until we destroy ourselves.
That was actually a thought I had, like, not too long ago. Like just projecting myself going back in time as a kid in the 80s. And thinking that one day, as an adult, I'm going to have a device in my pocket that can take pictures, make movies, and
yeah,
call people.
You didn't think that, right?
No. It's like, this is, now it's like we take it for granted.
Exactly.
It's like,
yeah.
But it's an amazing thing we have here.
It really is, and it's only going to get more amazing as time goes on, like, it's each year.
Yeah.
Anything else on your list, mental list, Steve?
It's like brain dumping.
I know.
Oh, I think we might have covered most of it. I probably have some stuff that I'm not.
Well, we can always do a part. We can always do a part two.
That's true.
All right. So,
then and now,
from our brain dump to yours, we're gonna actually enjoy the outdoors instead of looking at my phone to make sure the microphone picks up. It's probably gonna be all fucking wind.
So ironic, isn't it?
I know, right? We're talking about all this shit. Meanwhile, we're victims of our own complaining.
I'm not looking down.
We're recording this on a smartphone.
Yes.
I'm staring at the water.
I'm staring at Mike and Steve because my back is to the water because the way the fucking chairs are set up. God damn it. All right. Well, that's it. I'm going to go look at the water. Bye, everybody. Oh, wait, Mike, where can they find you? Plug.
I'm near the water right now.
Okay.
No, I'm currently, I'm blogging. I'm trying to blog monthly, covering some conventions like AwesomeCon, Star Wars Celebration, stuff like that. You can find me at hypersonictuna.com.
Steve, plug something.
What would I plug?
Plug your band, Tofu Mofo.
Plug your phone.
Tofu Mofo. Wait, it's Bandcamp. It's on Bandcamp.
Okay. Tofu Mofo. And Steve wrote a great album. For those of you who hate their job and hate their commute, this is an album for you. It's called Tofu Mofo. One word. TOFUMOFO. And the album is called Songs in the Key of Fuck You. And it's on Bandcamp. Buy it, download it, listen to it.
It's political.
It's political. And I am Mike Lane. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Lane Act. That's Mike Lane ACT. And subscribe to this podcast. Write us, comment, even if you don't like us. But please like us. All right. Later, everybody. Bye.